Well, every once in a while, and this sort of ties in a little bit with what I just did and tried to pull a lot of things together. Every once in a while, for us who are preachers, we end up facing a task in our preaching that in one way or another, we're not really sure we can take on. I mean, there's so much going on in the text. There's so much going on in the story. There's no way we can take it on and do it justice in just one week. Well, what I've learned over the years in my preaching is that it's always, it's most often better to take on what you think you can handle than to handle more than you think you can take on, right? It's better to zero in on just a few points and develop them well rather than to take on too much and not do it very well at all. Well, this past week, as I was getting ready for this message, I found myself torn a little bit between either of those directions, all right? After all, we're in this series that we're calling our family tree. We're looking at some of our Old Testament ancestors. Today it's the person of Moses. And we only get one week to deal with their stories, right? And so this week, as I started thinking about what am we going to talk about with Moses, I thought, well, we could give a big picture overview. We could dive in and just focus on a few things and try to pull those out. Well, this week's character is one in which there is far more material to go after in one week than we could ever pull together in the time that we have. More chapters dedicated to the life and work of Moses than anyone else in the entire Bible, with the possible exception in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul. What I've decided to do instead of narrowing Moses' life down to a few main points and then focusing on that, or going after all of it and trying to not really giving any of it the time and attention it deserves, what I've decided to do is to do a little bit of both, to shoot for the middle. And so I want to give you today a big picture overview of what Moses and his life were all about. And from there, I want to hit on just a few of the life lessons that I believe we can take and apply in our lives from the life of this ancestor of ours. So let's start today with that big picture overview. I don't know how much you know about Moses. I don't know how much you've read. He's one of the more familiar characters in the Bible, all right? If you've seen the movie, all right, anybody seen the movie The Ten Commandments, all right? If you've seen that movie, you have at least a basic framework for some of the major themes. It's a movie that touches on a lot of the things going on in his life. It's also a movie that is, with so many of Hollywood things, that add a few little storylines that have designed to sell than they do actual scripture designed to save. Well, anyway, regardless of that, the life of Moses is one that even without Hollywood could easily become a best-selling story. His life, his work, his accomplishments, it's quite a list. I mean, just hit some of the high points. He was the writer of the first five books of the Bible. All right, that in itself is certainly a feat worth noting. In the truest sense of the word, he was also one of the great Old Testament prophets. We don't think about him that way, but he was. He was a spokesman on behalf of God, and that's what a prophet did in the Old Testament. He was also the great lawgiver that we have in the Bible, right? It was through Moses that God worked to give us the law that we have today, known as the Ten Commandments. And he was also the one, on top of all of that, chosen by God to lead the nation of Israel out of their slavery in Egypt on into the promised land. Those are just some of the highlights. No matter how you come at it, the life of Moses is as accomplished and storied as it gets. Nonetheless, even with all of that, as great as Moses' life was and many his story might have been, his life and its story are all set in the context of the biblical story and the saving work of God. God is the main character in the story. God is the one, as always, doing the saving work. And he's doing it, as we've been following in this series, not only through a number of flawed individuals and not-so-functional families, but also, as we're going to begin seeing this week and on in the weeks ahead, through a nation that was more reluctant to follow than it was ready to be faith-filled. The context for Moses' life was the slavery of the nation of Israel under the Pharaoh of Egypt. The story of Exodus, the second book in the Bible, picks up right where the story of the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis, leaves off. The only disconnect in the entire story, is that the two books have been disconnected between the life of Joseph, the life of Moses, with 400 years in between. 400 years in between. Now listen to what it says in chapter 1. We didn't read this. It says chapter 1, verse 6. It says, "Now Joseph and all of his brothers, all that generation died, but the Israelites..." The nation was growing. The Israelites were fruitful and multiplied greatly, became exceedingly numerous, so the land was filled with them. All right, try to picture that. And then it says, verse 8, "Then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt." And that's when their years of bondage and slavery began. The story of the birth of Moses, and we read that as our first reading today, sets the stage for almost everything that follows. God has his fingerprints all over the story. Because the nation of Israel was becoming so great, the Pharaoh had ordered that all the male babies born were going to be killed. And it was happening. They were all being killed, except for this one. Moses is not only saved in the story, and follow this, the irony in it, saved by Pharaoh's daughter, but is actually nursed by Moses' mother and ends up growing up in Pharaoh's house. It's incredible how God works in this story. Now, we don't have time to go through all the detail, but it all starts to unfold rather quickly, all right, and fall into place after that. Go down the list of what happens. I'll just give you a quick summary and see if you can follow. You probably know a lot of this story. Chapter 2, Moses realizes he's not an Egyptian, but a Hebrew, an Israelite. And he ends up, when he sees his people being mistreated as slaves, he ends up killing one of the Egyptian taskmasters. The same chapter, the next day, the word of what Moses has done gets out, and he runs scared for his life from the Pharaoh, and he ends up in a land called Midian, where he gets married, begins having children, and raises a family. From there, in chapter 3, it's a story of God speaking to Moses through a burning bush, telling him that he's the one God has chosen to lead the people out of their bondage. Chapter 4, it's one excuse after another offered by Moses, right? As to why God, in choosing him, had chosen the wrong one. Chapter 5, after running out of excuses, Moses goes to the Pharaoh and demands that he let the Israelites go. Chapter 6, it doesn't work. The Pharaoh refuses to let them go, and it says God had chosen to harden his heart. Chapters 7 through 10, we find those 10 plagues. All right, if you remember those chapters, it becomes very clear in those chapters that God is the one in control, and yet Pharaoh still doesn't give in. Chapters 11 and 12, that's where we find the story of the Passover, the 10th and final plague that would finally lead to the deliverance of Israel from the bondage under the Pharaoh, and that would ultimately point to the deliverance of all people, including us, through the death and resurrection of God's Son, Jesus Christ. From there, fast forward, Moses leads the people out of Egypt into the wilderness, across the Red Sea, where for 40 years they have to wander because they're not willing to trust in what God has said. Some of the other detail, remember some of this? Manna in the morning, quail at night, water flowing from nothing more than a rock, dangers avoided, enemies defeated, a strange and almost unbelievable building of a golden calf. Along the way, God would give them the Ten Commandments. All of the moral and civil and ceremonial laws were put into place. His covenant was confirmed. A tabernacle was constructed. And the structure that they had of the Old Testament priest was all came about. And while they were wandering, if nothing else, they came to know and believe that God, and only God, was in control. Now, all of that to say that the story of Moses and how he was used by God is as powerful a story in the Bible as you will ever find. If you're not familiar with it, and I just hit on some of the highlights, I'd challenge you to go back and read it, the book of Exodus, all right? Even if you are familiar with it, I'd challenge you to go back and read it. It's a good study. Now, all we've done so far is that first part of what I said I wanted to do, give you a big picture overview of the life of Moses. Far more events and details in the story than we mentioned. But I said I wanted to do two things. So let's move beyond the story itself, some of the history, and see what kind of practical life lessons we can take away from the life of Moses. There's a lot going on in the story. There are many lessons to learn. Let me narrow it down to just three. Here's the first. Moses was a leader. He did some incredible things for God. He was arguably the greatest leader the nation of Israel ever had. But he was a reluctant leader. He had all kinds of excuses. He wanted to find any way possible to get out. But God took him from where he was, prepared him for what he was called to do, and worked through him to carry out his will. Here's the first. When God calls us, he prepares us for what follows. When God calls us, he prepares us for what follows. On our church council leadership team here at the church, maybe I've mentioned this already, we're working our way through a book by J. Oswald Sanders titled Spiritual Leadership. I read it for the first time myself about a year ago. We're reading it through now as a group of leaders. It's a book I wish I would have read 30 years ago when I started my ministry. It's written specifically for pastors and church leaders, touches on some of the things that God is looking for in those who lead. But it also lifts up lessons for all of us that can be applied in almost any area of life. Leadership in your work, leadership in your home, spiritual leadership in your marriage, in your family, among your friends. As we've been reading it through, one of the consistent responses from our leadership council, as we're reading it, almost everything that is said is that their response is, God must have chosen the wrong ones. I mean, we're on the leadership team, God must have picked the wrong people. You read what he wants, you read what he asks for, and we think, that's not us. Almost consistent, month after month. You know what we're finding out? You know what we're figuring out? We're figuring out that that assessment is right. We don't have what it takes. We don't have what it takes to lead. We're not the ones. God must have made a mistake. We're finding out that on that basis alone, we're probably right. What we're also figuring out, is that when God calls us, he prepares us for what follows. You know what I find interesting about the story of the life of Moses? You know what's interesting? A lot of things here, but what's interesting when it comes to his being a leader, what's interesting is that when God calls Moses to be a leader, God already knows that Moses would have a laundry list of excuses for why it's not going to work. He already knew that. Why Moses says, I don't know your name. He says, what if they want some kind of proof? He says, I'm not very eloquent. He says, I stumble over words, right? I can't get them out, right? And God already knew this. God already knew when he called Moses that Moses would have these excuses. He already knew when he chose him that his excuses might actually have been true. But he called him anyway. He chose him anyway. And in calling and choosing him, he promised that he would give him whatever he would need and prepare him for whatever lay ahead.